Afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Dr. John Andrus. So let's get into our first news story of today, and we're going to be talking a little bit about the commission of inquiry that President Ramaphosa has promised to set up. So following the allegations against the Minister of Police, Senzo Cochuno, by Lieutenant General in the KwaZulu-Natal Police Commissioner, Lieutenant General Mkhwanazi, the President spoke to the nation last night and announced what he's going to be doing about this. And I think the first thing to note about this decision was from when the allegations were made to make an announcement to the public, which I think is a great mark against the decision, in that it's very clear that he had to consult stakeholders and people in the ANC before he did this. But regardless, let's see what he actually said. So he started off in his speech just outlining what the allegations were that Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi had made. He said that this raises serious concern around the constitution, the rule of law, and national security, which I think is all correct. He said, these allegations, if proven true, threaten to undermine the confidence of South Africans in the ability of the South African Police Service to protect them and effectively fight crime and corruption. All very true. So I think that was good that he initially opened by putting this stuff in the true proper context that it deserves to be. This is a very serious deal. He didn't try to downplay it too much. He then said that he'll be establishing a commission of inquiry led by the acting Deputy Chief Justice Mlanga, who is going to be retiring soon, which is why he said he would be fit to do this. And he also said that he'd be appointing a acting Minister of Police, Feroz Khachalia, while in the meantime, Senzo Mchunu was placed on special leave. So I've seen the media reaction so far be very hostile. Just everyone has been piling on. Political parties, media columnists are saying, another commission of inquiry. You know, what is this going to do? Is there any point to this? He's just buying time. This is all just to get us off his back. And you know what? I'm very sympathetic to those complaints about what President Ramaphosa's track record shows. I mean, of course, the Zondo Commission, which wasn't created by President Ramaphosa, was created by Jacob Zuma. But the recommendations of that report have never been taken on board. There have been other inquiries and things that have just been ignored by the president. And yet, I do feel the need to defend the president a little bit. In terms of my relatively low expectations, I think that Ramaphosa met them. These allegations are not proven, and they need to be proven before decisive, definitive action can be made, before criminal charges can be brought, before ministers can be fired. But they are also serious and credible, which is why they need to be investigated in public. And so I think the president actually, and I know our audience is not going to probably like me for this too much, but I think he probably made the right call here, suspending the Minister of Police, which I actually didn't expect him to do because accountability is a foreign word to so much of the ANC. He suspended the minister and he's launched this commission of inquiry. Now, it's supposed to produce a report in 3 months, which seems like a bit long. And also the devil is certainly in the details here. Does this report actually produce anything worthwhile? And does this, you know, is it actually acted on if it does say something important? So, John, I've rambled on a bit there. Am I being far too generous to the president? What's your take on this?
Well, I think I share the sentiments of many South Africans who are a bit tired of commissions of inquiry that seem to sprout like mushrooms after a good rain and yet don't seem to produce much of any substance. Well, let me rather rephrase that. They do sometimes produce work of substance like the Zondo Commission did, but not consequences of substance. And where you may be right is that in the case of this police inquiry, the revelations that come out of it, if it does its job properly, could potentially be quite disruptive to the political stability in South Africa. And in that sense, maybe President Ramaphosa was actually being slightly courageous in setting something like this up, in creating a mechanism for shining a spotlight into the dark corners of South Africa's intertwining political and criminal systems. That is very uncomfortable, I think, for many people in the ANC. So what we'll have to see is to see whether the commission does its work without fear or favor, if it is willing to go into the dark places that exist in our society. And if it does, then it may well be a risk to the president and also the ANC. And I think part of the trade-off that the president at least implicitly had in mind, is that there's the risk that the commission's investigation will reveal a lot of very unsavory details about the ANC, which could harm the ANC in electoral support. So we know that crime is one of the main concerns of South Africans when they are asked about what the priorities are. And this commission could reveal quite a lot of links between the political system and our criminal underworld. That is on the one side of the equation. The other side of the equation is that maybe the president hopes that this commission will exonerate the now suspended police minister, Msunu, because it may well be that, in fact, he is much cleaner than the allegations by Nkonazi would lead us to believe. So a quite tricky balancing act for the president, I think full of risk. And if the commission does its work well, then I think those risks are very real to the party, to the president. And we could be in for some quite exciting times.
I think it is interesting how sort of broad the terms were of what the commission will investigate. So from the president's speech, the commission may investigate the facilitation of organized crime, suspension or manipulation of investigations, inducement to criminal actions by law enforcement leadership, commission of any other criminal offenses and intimidation, victimization or targeted removal of whistleblowers or officials resisting criminal influence. The commission will investigate the role of current or former senior officials in certain institutions who may have aided or abetted the alleged criminal activity, failed to act on credible intelligence or internal warnings, or benefited financially or politically from a syndicate's operations. The institutions are the South African Police Service, the National Prosecuting Authority, the State Security Agency, which is interesting because that's traditionally thought of as a hotbed of anti-Ramaphosa people, the judiciary and the magistratory, and the Metropolitan Police Departments of Johannesburg, Ekurhuleni, and Tshwane. So this is, you know, there's a lot of people who get caught up in this. And I think it does have the potential, as you say, to be quite disruptive. But that's only if it produces something substantive. If the president gets a report and then just sits on it, then we know that this was just a dodge.
Well, I think even then it would still be damaging. So I think the most innocuous product the commission could produce would be a report that doesn't say very much at all. And that says, you know, we looked into links between crime and intelligence or crime and the police services, but actually it's all fine. There's no such thing as criminal infiltration. The police is doing its work well as can be expected.
Yeah.
And therefore our recommendation is to do nothing. So that's probably going to be the most anodyne version of a commission that we could see.
And that would be devastating too, I think, for the whole government's credibility, because I think everyone knows that that's almost certainly not true.
Yeah, I mean, we all have our expectations about the way these things work, and we would be quite surprised if that were the finding of the commission. We were also skeptical of the timelines. So in the president's address, he said that the commission would be required to produce interim reports at 3 months, at 6 months. There was no deadline given for the final report, and we thought that maybe this timeline was a bit long. But given its scope, if it's going to look into Metro Police and the judiciary and the magistrates and state security and the police, it's a big job. So I wonder how far they will range in their investigation.
Because if you do any kind of real investigation that isn't just a cover-up kind of investigation, I suspect that turning over that rock would find so many things that, you know, an end date for this thing. It might be a little bit like the Zondo Commission, which went on forever and ever and ever because it just kept finding so much stuff about the specific thing. So I think, you know, the 3 months for the first interim report, I mean, maybe that's a bit long. I think the interim report thing is actually kind of a good idea because then you have something to say, okay, well, now we have some idea of where this is going. You know, if it was 12 months and then it comes out and it just is a whitewash, then we know, you know, everyone's time would be wasted. But yeah, interesting stuff. The president doesn't deserve, I think, a lot of the benefit of the doubt. Still, this is probably the right call. I'm sure he'll disappoint me still going forward. What do you make of the acting minister of police? It's interesting that the president seems to have been trying to find someone who was sort of outside the current ANC sort of power block, but is still very much I would say, a cadre of the ANC's, very much in the ANC's ideological universe. I don't know that much about Feroz Khojaly, though, but what's your take on that?
Also, I don't have a good read on him. I do think that he exists in the ANC ideological universe, certainly. We heard earlier today that he was involved in promoting the idea of demographic representativity, so a defender of transformation on race basis, etc. That certainly puts him in line with mainstream ANC thinking. Probably the ideal candidate would be somebody from the president's perspective who is on board with ANC thinking, but not aligned with factions. And we have this idea that this entire police story is actually driven by factions within the ANC, maybe KwaZulu-Natal against Ramaphosa, something like that. And then the question is Feroz Khojaly, has he been out of active politics for long enough not to be actively aligned with any side? And that does that boost his credibility as a kind of nonpartisan actor within cabinet? That might have been what the president was going for here.
I think that's exactly right. But yes, we'll see how he does on the job. But yeah, this is, I think the story has not even begun to be finished yet. This is probably going to eat up a lot of news for the next couple of, maybe even the next year in the lead up to the next election.
And was he not on the anti-corruption commission?
Yes, which as we know from all the corruption that's still going on has not really seemed to have achieved much, considering that most people were sort of confused to hear that he was on said anti-corruption commission.
Yes, the National Anti-Corruption Advisory Council, I see.
Yes, with 2022. Yes, with all of its successes since then, such as, and then also...
And also, of course, yes,
the other thing. Of course, yes. So, yes, not a great ringing endorsement there. But, anyway, we'll keep a close eye on this one, and I look forward to seeing that interim report. I think the public should get very upset if it's delayed, and I think there's going to be a strong incentive for the president to delay that interim report, as so often happens with government issues. But anyway. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to our next story. And we had, this is sort of two topics in one. And the first is that the president last week began talking about, he sort of opened the national dialogue. And we heard from the Eminent Persons Group, which is such a weird thing, who are all these kind of sort of famous-y South African people who are all invited to talk to this thing. Opening the Eminent Persons Group, saying this is an opportunity for ordinary South Africans to reflect and dream an exciting new dream for a young generation of young people. Miss South Africa Mia LaRue said, as someone who has often felt their voice went unheard, the national dialogue provides that opportunity for my voice to be heard. And we had lots of warm, fuzzy feelings and goodness and all that wonderful stuff. The question, however, is this actually going to do anything? Because let's go and look at sort of the real issues that this dialogue should be addressing. It's looking increasingly likely that Arsenal Mittal, who announced earlier this year that they were going to be shutting down, I think it's their long steel production factory, is going to be closing soonish. And that it's, despite government saying that it would save these jobs, that the 3,500 jobs and possibly about 100,000 sort of related jobs that are kind of downstream of the direct jobs may be disappearing. At the same time, our car manufacturing industry has been absolutely devastated by the Trump-imposed tariffs, with exports to the United States plunging 87%. And we also had business leadership of South Africa saying that government needed to do interventions to save business from the tariffs, or the potential tariffs in South Africa, and that it should consider basically essentially bailouts or special loans for businesses affected by tariffs. So the economic situation is dire. What do you make of all this, John?
Yeah, I was really struck by the sort of just the disconnect between the national dialogue and the economic news that's coming from various sectors. And another story we also looked at was the vehicles torched and stoned in protest over My City Jobs. So this is a project in Cape Town, and people were hoping to get jobs on that project and were very upset when they didn't. So protested then by setting fire to vehicles and stoning other vehicles and so on. And I think it is reflective of sort of the state of desperation and the urgent desire among South Africans to find good jobs. And instead of focusing on that and realizing also the job losses that might be coming down the line because of tariffs, for example, and because of ArcelorMittal's closing its long steel business, that's going to happen in other industries as well. And more people are going to be in that situation. And even while all of that is going on, we get these statements like from Dr. Brigalia Bam, who's one of the Dr. Brigalia Bam, who's one of the eminent persons, who said, this is an opportunity for ordinary South Africans to reflect and dream an exciting new dream for the younger generation of a future South Africa. And it just seems impossibly unrealistic, impractical, theoretical.
Well, dream is the right word, right? Something that's not really tied to reality.
Yes, exactly. And so I do think that the national dialogue is quite disconnected from the lived reality, lived experience of South Africans. It does not look like it's going to make any contribution to addressing those problems. And that is quite worrying. You know, I think even with the job losses that we're seeing, the vehicle exporters, it's not the entire car manufacturing industry that's being devastated. It's the ones most exposed to the American market. Mercedes-Benz, right. I think, is one of them because they're exporting a lot of C-class Mercedes to the United States. Other manufacturers are not quite as affected. But the problem ultimately also isn't Trump per se or the United States. The problem is that we've created a very weak economy, you know, that's not resilient, yeah, that can't stand up to shocks.
Exactly. Our car manufacturing industry has been having lots of problems for a long time now, mostly due to labor disputes, cost of labor, business regulation, that kind of thing. So it was already sickly before this shock hit. And so if we were in a much stronger position, if this thing had been growing and growing, this would be a setback, but it would be recoverable from.
Yeah.
But, you know, as you say, this is, you know, we've set the condition to make ourselves vulnerable. And this is, I think, the story I take away from the whole tariff thing, was that if we had a growing, massively pumping economy that was producing mining, manufacturing, and, you know, and services for all of Africa, then, you know, if the Americans said, well, we're going to tariff all your stuff, we could say, okay, well, that sucks, and we're going to have to make a plan, but at the end of the day, we'll be fine, but we may not be fine.
Exactly. And what we're also seeing as a common thread amongst these stories is the call for subsidies. So, you know, the motor vehicle assembly industry in South Africa is already subsidized. And, you know, we had Audi, I think it was earlier in the year, calling for more subsidies to allow them to continue producing. We saw the steel manufacturer similarly, having been talking about closing down the longs business since last year, getting, I think, a 1.6 billion rand subsidy from the government in March, allowing them to continue for six more months, and now saying, look, we need more subsidies if you want us to continue going for longer. It also reflects the state of intervention by the state in the economy,
right?
Trying to prop up industries, trying to pick winners, trying to pour money down bottomless black holes and hoping that this will create a sustainable industry, and it won't.
And making it the taxpayer's problem once again. Yeah.
Exactly.
And, you know, if you look at our finances, our national finances, the taxpayer cannot be squeezed much more. So this is not going to work. And it's you know, I understand why business is saying this, but honestly, what business should be arguing for is to change the business environment, to deregulate, to do all the things that would make it easier, not to just say, no, but we want free money from the government to prop up the businesses that don't make any money. I understand that, you know, the tariffs are a real threat, but like asking for the taxpayer to bail you out is not going to help anyone in the long term.
Yeah. And I think also sort of an interesting side note on this question of disconnect. One of the things we saw coming out last week was the ANC's annual report, which, among many other things, noted that the number of members had been declining. So from August 2022 to December 2024, they had a decline of 15.5% in membership from 690,000 down to 580,000. And the response in that annual report is sort of to strengthen the ideological training of members and leaders and elected representatives. But they're going to be strengthened in exactly the same ideology that led them to the sorry state, which is still a state of disconnect between what is going on in the real economy versus what the ANC is preaching. And that state of disconnect is perfectly reflected in this national dialogue with eminent, comfortable people opining about a glorious future, even while jobs are being lost and, you know, every day in this economy. So that's it's not a sustainable way to run a party or to run a country. And I think for the ANC, the bending or breaking moment is coming. You know, if they don't bend on principle and adjust their policies, then they are going to be broken by the electorate. The voters will not stand for it any longer.
No, I think that is exactly right. We really are living in a transition period in South African history. And I think there's been nothing that I've seen recently to dissuade me from that view. The next local government elections will probably come as a shock to the ANC. And that's going to set them up poorly for 2029. And look, I'm skeptical that they will be able to change. They've been given so many opportunities to change direction. But the party has time and time again shown it can't. And it certainly won't be able to under President Ramaphosa, who has shown himself, shall we say, I don't know, what's the opposite of decisive? Indecisive? He's the quintessentially indecisive leader. And I think that has been what's gotten dithering. Exactly. Yes. He's the ultimate ditherer. I think that's at a large part why the ANC really finds itself in this position.
But imagine like the opportunity for a political entrepreneur to hear what we are saying and say, you've got this great brand in the form of the ANC with, you know, unbelievable brand potential. And let me be the one who's going to put this party on a new course. For somebody with vision and drive, there's a huge opportunity there.
That's the theory behind Patrice Motsepe as the potential future leader of the ANC, right? Is that he could be what Ramaphosa promised to be, which was a sensible businessman who came from outside to fix the ANC or something like that. I'm not really sure how anyone bought that story back when Ramaphosa sold it, but Patrice Motsepe is actually a much more credible carrier of that message. Although, you know, whether he'll be able to take control of the ANC, enact any of the changes like that, I'm very skeptical of.
I'm very skeptical as well. Don't think that's going to work.
Yes. Still, when your other options are Fikile Mbalula and Paul Mashatile, might be the best option. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. We hope you found the show interesting, and we will be back tomorrow with the Daily Friend Wrap. Cheers, everyone. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.